Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben. Presented by Brakes Plus. Here you go. This one's from Luke. He says, Mark, does the re-signing of Courtland Sutton and Tim Patrick make Jerry Jeudy now a potential trade prospect when it comes to pursuing an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson?
That's it. Yeah, like, that's an interesting question. I don't think necessarily with Jerry Jeudy that's the case. I would still think you still need kind of a lift the top of coverage guy. Because neither of those guys are big body guys. Those guys are, you know, beat you up, at the line of scrimmage, body you up, get in between you and a defensive back. They're not guys off the release that are going to create instant separation. So no, I still think that Jerry Jeudy is a guy that they're going to want on this roster long term. Now, I think he needs to, you know, continue to grow as a football player. That would be my one criticism is you got to do some of the dirty work stuff that, oftentimes, you know, you catch him on film where he's just not willing to do it. And that's something that has to be, taught. That's something that has to be, that he has to, you know, take pride in and grow in that stuff. But I don't think he becomes trade bait.
Hey, before we get back into sports.
Yeah.
A question of my own. With tomorrow being Wednesday, day before mm-hmm. Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
are we kind of looking ahead here? I'm looking to get your feedback, listener feedback, Millennial Ben's feedback. Are we getting loose tomorrow?
Oh, yeah.
Tomorrow will get loose day?
Yeah, we need to.
Is tomorrow Friday?
Tomorrow is, we. You know what we should do?
Are we coming out with the song tomorrow?
Yes.
All
yes.
Right.
I think we should just go ahead and.
It's Friday.
Right. Just make tomorrow is Friday.
Okay.
All right.
Fair enough. Benny, you got that? All right. Thumbs up there from Benny. Some more on the text line from Gary in Meade. Apparently not impressed by everything the Avalanche have done lately. When the Avs can beat Vegas, let me know. Okay.
Wow.
Gary saying wake me up in April or May for the playoffs here when it comes to that. Another one here. Jared Bednar is number one. Not impressed. Sincerely, Patrick Waugh. Oh my goodness, we had some fun with Patrick, didn't we?
Oh, I love Pat. I love it when Patrick came into
when
studio.
When he came in studio?
He was so easy. So easy.
So easy to provoke, right?
Right. You just be like, so, what'd you think of the effort on that one play?
It's true.
All you have to do is watch one play.
Yeah. So, coach, Matt Duchene, your thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty soon, we're reaching for the dump button. I was always, for everybody who was listening on our stream, which, little, you know, inside Radio 101, you didn't get the delay, so you got Patrick unfiltered.
Right.
That was good stuff.
Yeah, Patrick would always drop at least one, you know, at least one phrase or one word.
Oh, there'd be one S-bomb per show.
At least.
Pretty much, yeah.
Sometimes two.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
So, yep. Yeah, he would, he did not.
Please stop.
He did not want to suffer fools.
No. Let's get some more here from Ian. 15 and $9 million a year is not a lot of money. Stop it. One elite wideout costs over $23 million. You get two for one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, neither of them are elite.
That's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. You're getting two good players.
Yeah.
That are very similar in skill set.
Like so, somebody said, hey, you know, the Broncos are able to sign their two stud receivers. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm all for using terms like good, solid when it comes to describing these two. Let's not go with studs. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're not in the stud or elite territory yet. Hopefully they get there and then these deals look like complete bargains.
Right.
But, let's stay away from stud or elite. Okay.
I agree. Yeah, they're not there, and they're not. Listen, I don't know that either of these guys will ever be kind of number one top wide receivers. I don't. My gut would tell me no. My gut would tell me you're never going to talk about these guys being, you know, Julio Jones type of guys or, you know, give me, Hopkins type of guys or Adams type of guys in Green Bay. I just don't think that's ever going to happen. But good, productive, you know, really nice players, absolutely. I think both of those guys can be those guys.
From Ryan in Missouri, Evans, you always shout from the mountaintops that the receiver position is the most dependent position on the field. I beg to differ. The quarterback depends on every position to do their job so he can do his. All right, let's examine this a little bit more. I have my reasons, but what would you say, why is a receiver dependent on a quarterback?
Well, the receivers...
And not necessarily the other way around.
Right. A receiver's dependent on everyone. Like, everyone has to do their job for the receiver to even sniff a ball. And that's just the way it is. I mean, if you don't block for the quarterback, I mean, he can't get you the ball, right? I mean, that's just the way it works. So, we have seen quarterbacks that can basically carry a football team. A quarterback who can make up for a lack of an elite level offensive line. A quarterback who can read the route combinations, read the coverages before he ever snaps the ball. You know, as I got an opportunity to talk to Tom Brady last week, he said, I am not a reactionary athlete. It's not my game. If I have to rely on my ability to react, we're in trouble. I have to read the defense and know where I'm going with the football beyond the shadow of a doubt. And, you know, he said, sometimes they get me. But for the most part, you know, I know what they're doing. I know where I want to go with the football. And when you have that ability, you know what happens? Even if you have an average offensive line, guys don't get to your quarterback. The ball is out in under 2 seconds before they can even get there. I don't know if you guys remember watching Peyton Manning orchestrate an offense here in Denver, Colorado that was supreme, was the best offense in football for 4 years. Or 3.5 years. And what happened? Well, then Peyton Manning was just orchestrating. And that offensive line was like the warts on that group were covered because Peyton was so good.
So let's
say,
let's put a little list together, okay? Kind of start and put this list together. So the elite quarterback, first of all, understands offensive line play to make sure that they can get their offensive lines into the best protection schemes, adjustments to make sure that receivers have a chance to go out and catch balls. The elite quarterback recognizes, reads defenses in a way that the average quarterback will not. So there you go. A receiver's going to benefit there. You talk all the time about how receivers, or how about windows, throwing windows in the NFL, so much smaller than what they are in college. So the elite quarterbacks are able to throw into those windows. Average quarterbacks are not. Again, the receiver benefits. You talk all the time about quarterbacks throwing receivers open by just their ball placement. That the talk to Brandon Stokley about it, how he would be able to know exactly where the guy covering him was based on where Peyton threw the ball, which allowed him to be able to react instantaneously after catching the ball and catch and get more yards. The best quarterbacks throw the ball accurately to guys so that they get more yards after catch than the average quarterback will. What else? Oh, okay. How many times we see a quarterback who throws the ball before the receivers even come out of his break? Again, recognition, understanding of where to go with the football, throw the ball before the guys even come out of the break, and it's there. Doesn't even have to have a lot of separation. because as soon as he turns his head, the ball's there. The defensive guy's powerless in that situation. These are all examples of how an elite quarterback make receivers better than they really are, and why the receiver is dependent. Even the receiver that gets wide open. Wide open. How many times do we see the average quarterback who can't go through his read, second, third, fourth, misses the guy who, if he had just been able to go to his fourth or fifth read, is wide open? Again, dependent. So, you know, I think that at times we try to make it. It's funny, we on one hand talk about the importance of the quarterback and how you have to have one, and you got to do anything you can to find one, even overdraft one. But yet when we want to talk about these receivers, the same folks like to make the argument, well, the quarterback is just as dependent on the receiver as the receiver is on the quarterback. Well, you can't have it both ways.
No.
What is it?
No, it's not, and it's not close. Quarterbacks, when you watch the elite guys, I think, you know, quarterbacks keep you healthy. I mean, a quarterback that's an elite level ball placement guy will sit you down in a zone so he doesn't run you into traffic and get you hit. Will throw a low ball on purpose to make sure he keeps you away from contact. Who, you know, even when you're covered, you're completely covered on a fade ball. But the DB doesn't have his head turned around, right? The DB's looking at you. You throw it on that back shoulder and let you adjust and catch a touchdown when you're completely covered. A quarterback who's not skilled won't throw that ball. Oh, he's covered. No, he's not. Even though he's completely covered, he's not covered because the DB isn't looking at me. So let me go ahead and throw it. You know, you're throwing a seam in the end zone, in the red zone. And that seam is coming down, and you know a safety, single high safety, you know a post safety is standing there or is there, and he's gonna blow that receiver up. He's gonna create an incomplete pass, and then all of a sudden you throw it on the opposite shoulder, and the receiver in mid route has to spin around and catch it on his backside on the backside, and the average quarterback puts it right there so it gets defended. The good quarterback puts it opposite and makes that receiver turn 180 to catch it. Like, you see it all the time, Mike. You see it all the time when you're watching games or you're studying games or you're breaking them down, where the good quarterbacks set guys up for success. The bad quarterbacks set guys up to be defended. And it's blatant. And oftentimes the really good quarterbacks look like they make an errant throw that a receiver makes a great catch on. It's not an errant throw. It's the perfect throw, and he expects his receiver to adjust. And those receivers start to understand what my guy is doing for me. And that's where you see that stuff. And I don't know. I just find it fascinating watching the elite level throwers of the football it's not even throwers of the football. It's throwers of the football and the guys who really truly understand the game. Guys who play the game above the shoulders, that what they do to set themselves up and set the receivers up for success. Those guys fascinate me to watch them.
Didn't Emmanuel Sanders, when he came here, didn't he say, "I've come to wide receiver heaven"?
Yeah.
Why do you think he said that?
Right. He talked about how catching the ball from Peyton versus catching the ball from Big Ben, who's going to the Hall of Fame. He basically said it wasn't close in the way he set you up. And so, anyhow, whatever. I mean, it's just, you know, people can argue it, but the people who argue it don't really know.
Oh, here's one for you. I know you love these kinds.
Okay.
Actually, I think I recognize this number. Is this from Shaner? I think this is from Shaner.
Really?
Stink. You talk out of your butt. You bash organizations for taking wide receivers and tight ends in the first round, then bash the Packers for not taking them in the first round, even though they have built a team around Aaron the right way and have depth of talent to be in title games.
I didn't bash the Packers. I said that Aaron Rodgers was angry about it. Did you hear me bash the Packers?
But okay, then should he?
I just stated a fact that Aaron Rodgers was pissed, and he's upset with the organization that they haven't one supported him and made him part of the process. I had nothing to do with bashing the Packers.
Okay. Fine. Okay. All right. Shaner, step back. But all right, then why hasn't Aaron Rodgers throughout all this then been able to sit back, reflect, private moment, and say, you know what? Actually, instead of disrespecting me, the Packers have paid me the ultimate compliment because they've acknowledged how great I am,
mm-hmm.
how elite I am, and they know and they trust that I'll be able to take average wide receivers and make them great. Devontae Adams, by the way, was a second-round pick.
Correct.
Okay? They trust me to do that, and that frees them up to go out and, in the words of Mark Schlereth, roster build, mm-hmm. and be able to build the all-around kind of team that allows us to compete year in and year out and go to AFC or go to NFC championship games. They're actually showing faith, respect, and trust in me, and I should take that as the ultimate compliment instead of being angry about it.
Correct. I mean, you should. And I agree with that, Mike. I agree with that point. The point on Aaron Rodgers, though, is I want to be consulted with. He feels like he has earned the right to be consulted with, to be part of the organization, to be part of the free agent signings, for them to talk to him and say, hey, what do you think about this? And then ultimately not to lie on him. And that whole thing came down where he really got upset. It wasn't so much about the first rounders, even though he's mentioned it. What was it really about? It was about them coming out and saying, yeah, we talked to Aaron Rodgers about this Jordan Love signing, this Jordan Love move up in the draft to grab him, which he said was, you know, blatantly untrue. And that's where he was angry. That's what he was upset about. And not that he doesn't like Jordan Love, but he looked at that like, Jordan Love isn't helping us right now at the end of my career win a world championship. And I think that's pretty fair. So, I mean, those are the things that he was angry about. But you're right about them trusting Aaron Rodgers to develop their roster and do all that stuff. Yes.
So if this was the case of the Packers just saying, all right, Aaron, hey, come on into the inner sanctum here. Let's talk. And here's what we're thinking of. We like this receiver. We mm-hmm. like this tight end, but we think we can get a receiver in a later round that we know you'll turn into a star, and we'd prefer to go get this linebacker or this cornerback for our defense. You okay with that? That's all he needed?
Well,
that's all he needed.
I think that that's part of what he needed. I think the bigger part, Mike, is don't tell me that you're going to involve me in these discussions and then basically don't involve me and go do something completely, you know, what I think is completely reckless in going out and getting my replacement. I mean, that's, you know, and moving up in the first round to get a really, you know, unproven guy. I think that's fair. Like, I think it just becomes, and this is the irony of this, you know, don't lie to me. whoa, Aaron, right? Pot introduced you to kettle, you know, when it comes to lying. But that's what he was upset about. Don't, like, as an organization, if George Payton says, hey, man, I'm going to involve you in decisions, and he gives you that guarantee, and then he doesn't, well, that'll piss you off. And so don't tell me, like, you're better off just telling Aaron, hey, listen, man, you know what your job is? Your job is to play quarterback and to develop the players that we give you. Okay? So that's how this game works. And that's how we operate our organization. So, you know, he may not like it, but at least you know where you stand.
Mm-hmm.
But don't come out and say, hey, man, we're going to involve you, and then, you know, blatantly lie about it.
Here's another one on the text line. Russell Wilson, really? He's thrown for 350 yards total in the last two games with two interceptions and no touchdowns. No thanks. Look elsewhere. Wow. Is Russell Wilson washed?
He's washed up. He did come off, he should still, in those two games that he played, he probably should still be rehabbing. He did have a major finger surgery that he came back that was supposed to be an 8-week, like rehab. And he came back in, what, 6 weeks? And, oh, by the way, you know, you're going to have some, some rust and some other things that are going to happen to you during that time when you can't play. So, I'm glad you're not running any organization.
Yeah, listen, in the last 4 years, Russell Wilson's touchdown to interceptions, ready? 34-11, 35-7, 31-5, 40-13. Even this year, 10-3. So if you think that's washed up and you'd rather look elsewhere, I'll tell you what, Dexter, you go look elsewhere. I'll take him.
I'll find a way to suffer
through with Russell Wilson.
Is that D-Mac? We need a top five quarterback.
No, even he knows.
Is that D-Mac? We need
Josh
a top
Allen.
Five.
Oh, I'm sorry.
By the way, think about that draft. You know, if you like, you would have been happy with any of those guys.
The Hall of Fame five.
The Hall of Fame five. You wanted them all.
Yep.
Everyone. It didn't matter which one.
Didn't matter what order, whatever. Either one.
You may be, after this season, to have your pick of three of the five.
Correct.
Josh Rosen got into a game the other night. Listen, we're sitting down as a crew because we're out in, where were we?
Philly.
We were in Philly. And so we go out bar food, you know, we're sitting down at the bar having chicken wings and the guy who's serving has he made some bet on like points in the second half, like he had to have, I don't know, I think it was the Patriots plus five or something, and they had kicked the field goal or plus six or whatever in the second half. And I said, don't worry, they're bringing in Josh Rosen. And I go, I guarantee you on this drive, he throws a pick six.
A pick six.
Yeah, I go, I guarantee you on this drive, he throws a pick six. And he throws, like the very next play, he throws the pick six to Van Noy. And I was like, told you, you win. You won your money. You talk about, I mean, so Josh Rosen will be available.
Yeah.
You can get one of your Hall of Fame five. Come on. They're done with the Sam Darnold experiment in Carolina, right?
Yep. Yep.
You can get him.
Yep.
And ultimately, you're probably going to be able to get Baker Mayfield.
They are booing Baker to the point where he uttered the most disingenuous comment of the week when he said, I don't care if they boo.
Yeah, he does.
Baker, you had a list. You had a list.
Yes.
Of everybody who denigrated you at Oklahoma, including Mark Schlereth. He was on your list. You had a list.
Yeah,
Don't tell me all of a sudden you're at the point now where you're like, hey, laissez-faire, I don't really care. Let them boo. Let them boo.
Let them eat cake. You're right. Everybody, right? You get three of the five right now.
Yep.
Three of the five are going to be probably available for you for really next to nothing. The first overall draft pick wouldn't garner a first round pick in a trade.
Correct.
He wouldn't bring a first rounder. The third overall draft pick last year brought you what? Do you remember what they traded him for?
Darnold?
Yeah.
The Sam Darnold trade, was it a second and a fourth? I think
it was
a second.
Third overall pick.
A sixth rounder in this past draft.
Uh-huh.
And a second? Yeah, a second and a fourth in 2022.
You can't get he's the third overall pick. You can't get a first rounder for him.
Look at the Jets. Good move. You get a second and a fourth this year.
Right.
For a guy who is no longer in the team that you traded to him to plans. So there you go. Hey, I can't help but notice I hear Mrs. S working around in the kitchen there. Did she make Papa Bear a little bit of brekkie this morning?
No, my granddaughters spent the night last night.
Oh, so they're getting taken care of.
Yeah,
first.
she's making them breakfast.
Ah,
right
I
now.
See. You have to wait.
Me, not so much.
Not so much.
But,
all right. Yeah. Coming up next, did the Nuggets make a huge mistake in signing Michael Porter Jr. so early and for so much? George Karl, our Nuggets analyst, will join us next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
See if we can hook up with George Karl. Let's see. Yes, the Nuggets were foolish to sign Michael Porter Jr. to a max deal. Next segment. Well, it is head-scratching, by the way, because not that they gave him a rookie contract. There were plenty of those given out last year, but you didn't have to go full max. There were plenty of other players who got much lesser deals that you could have given him, but you went with the full max, which, you know, guys like Luka Doncic and Trae Young got. I get it with those two, but boy. You really saw something, and you were betting on the come with him.
Mm-hmm.
And now that looks very, well, very risky. To be kind, very risky. Could have said something else, but yeah. Very risky.
I mean, it just is the fact that you gave him, I don't know. I mean, the fact that you gave him the max deal is, I guess, a bit surprising. So I don't know, man. I don't know what the difference would be with the lesser deal would be.
Well, okay. So some of the ones who were in this draft class who got extended, okay? Jaren Jackson with Memphis, 4 years, $100 million. Bridges from Phoenix, 4 years, $90 million. Let's see, a couple other guys that, Wendell Carter, Orlando, 4 years, $50 million. So those were guys who got those extensions, but you can go to the full 207, which is what Doncic, Porter and Trae Young got. And that's some interesting company that he's keeping.
Right.
Two guys who sort of already proven it versus a guy who you're betting on potential. And who had a questionable back issue before you even got to this point.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing. You know, the athletic potential and the ability to shoot and stuff is one thing. It was always there. But the fact that he missed significant time everywhere he's ever been with the back issue, that's entirely a different thing. And then the other part is, you know, from a coaching standpoint with Michael Malone, because of some of the things he doesn't do, he's never necessarily been a Michael Malone favorite, right? Like, he's always kind of been one of those guys that Michael can't wait to say, come over here and sit on the bench for a minute, right?
Let's talk.
Yeah, let's have a little combo, if you will. So, anyhow, yeah, it is. I guess that is surprising.
I like this one. Fellas, is there any injury clause in MPJ's contract? It seems highly negligent with his back injury history to not have an out if he continued to have back problems.
You would think, but
no, contracts in the NBA are not like that.
Yeah.
They are guaranteed.
Yeah, they're fully.
They're the kind of contracts that make Mark Schlereth and other NFL players weep with envy.
Yeah, it's always one of those things that we always, the NFL players look at it and go, really? But, you know, I mean, yeah, you're jealous. It's amazing. When you boil it right down, it's just absolutely amazing. And that contract, you know, it is funny now. I mean, with the ability to have hindsight, you know, with giving you perspective on this deal, we all were kind of shocked when they made the deal. Weren't we? We're like, whoa, can you believe they gave him a max deal? It doesn't kick into next year, but just based on the potential and based on, you know, the history we've seen.
There's one for you. You're going to love this one.
Okay.
So Wilson has an injured finger. Rodgers is a malcontent. Oh, Cousins is an overpaid, underperforming QB. I don't want these potential problems coming to Denver and mortgaging our future draft picks and possible young QB because the fan base is desperate for a quick fix. No, no, no. Go follow the Lakers, you desperate Bronco fans.
So you would rather have Sam Darnold?
Yes.
Or you'd rather have, I mean, Baker Mayfield?
You want
Josh Rosen?
Folks like that, they want the unicorn. They want the guy that we're going to be able to develop and watch and enjoy for 20 years.
Right.
And that'd be great, but there's a reason we call them unicorns.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're telling me that, well, first of all, in case of Russell Wilson, something to remember now. Russell Wilson turns 33 next week. 33. He is in his prime and will be in his prime for some time now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If you think now, and I don't know what number you put at it, but now I think in terms of quarterbacks who want to play, these are the quarterbacks who want to play, that the way that they get themselves, keep themselves in shape, and the way that the rules are put together to protect these guys, I now think of these guys as playing until they're at least 42. Okay, so
isn't that crazy?
Hold that thought. We've been able to do a hookup with George Carl, okay, who joins us now. Of course, he is our Nuggets analyst, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook. Coach, good morning. We're talking about Michael Porter Jr. Did the Nuggets make a mistake in not extending him, but extending him for that much?
Well, I think the situation right now is, you know, when you sign to max contracts, there's a window at one end of the spectrum that says it's a bad deal, and then at the other end is a great deal. And right now we're living where we're looking at it, it's a bad deal. And we got to look at it that way. I'm sure they have insurance on the contract, which makes it financially at least acceptable. But in the same sense, you know, it comes down to coaches don't like potential. You know, we want performance, not potential. And I think they rewarded Michael Porter Jr. for potential. I mean, the kid has potential to be an all-star basketball player. But he really hasn't played at that level. He's been too inconsistent. And he hasn't had the ability to make other people better when he does play. And I think that's where young players don't get it. Great players make other players better. And too many young players trying to make to be a great player by stats and by numbers. And the truth of the matter is great players win games, they lead their team, and they make other people better.
You know, in that regard, what do you see from him, like, from the standpoint? I know everybody says, well, he's, an unbelievable athlete at 6'11", and he's a pure shooter. But when you look at Michael Porter Jr. through a coach's eyes, like, what is it that you see that you just are like, these are the three things or two things that have to be better, that he has to develop to make him like a viable max contract guy?
Well, I think the things that come to mind real quickly are defense and his ability to make other people better. I mean, and to fit in to be a leader of a team rather than just an individual that has really great shooting skills. He is a good rebounder. I'll give him that. I think he's a rebounder and shooter or a big-time NBA talent. But he's got to get the other aspects of the game, the little things that win close games, the little things, the physicality of the game, the mentality of the game. And don't get me wrong, this is not a criticism of Michael Porter Jr. as it's a criticism of fans love young players that they haven't seen before, and they overreact, and they want them to play every night. They want to get 40 minutes when they should get 20 minutes. But in the truth of the matter is, Michael Porter Jr. is a talent that has to prove that he's a stud. And right now, he hasn't done that.
All right. Real quick, George, 13 of the next, I think, 18 are on the road for a Nuggets team that right now is 9-8. They're banged up. They're missing Michael Porter Jr. Nikola Jokic is banged up. Where would you put your level of concern right now for the Nuggets as they embark on this stretch on a scale of 1 to 10?
It's rising. I know that. It's rising. It's going up. The schedule was very, very hard. But, you know, Jokic is good enough to navigate any type of team through that. But what I don't like about the team right now, it doesn't play with confidence. You know, even last year when they didn't play well, they were cocky, they were confident, and they came back the next night and usually kicked somebody's butt. This team is searching a little bit for its personality. It's searching for its toughness. And in some ways, I think Jokic is, you know, I think everybody's a little worried that we're going to wear Jokic out because he's going to have to do a lot in these next, as you say, next 20 games to just to tread water, to stay above water. Because I think once they get by this stretch of the schedule comes to them a little bit. And maybe they'll get lucky and Murray comes back early. And maybe Porter's injury is not a season-ending injury, but something. Because they are a talented basketball team. And if they get it, I mean, the thing about the NBA, and then we see it in baseball, we see it in a lot of sports that play long seasons. You know, you don't play well all year long. You do have these moments where you're searching. And that's where they're at right now. And it comes, the road trip and all the road games come at Christmas time and New Year's Eve time. That bothers me a little bit because there's more distractions to your team. But I think this team has got to be given, you got to give them some confidence that they're capable of making this work and come back. So that's where I'm at.
All right, George, man, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys. Enjoy. Celebrate.
Absolutely. You and yours as well. George Carl with some great, great insight. Coaches don't like potential. Coaches want performance. It's why George never liked to play young players here. It's why Michael Malone doesn't like to play good players, especially when you're in the business of winning and the expectations are to win.
Mike, we used to say it all the time. All the time. When I was playing for the Broncos, when we were in championships, all the time. It was an organizational philosophy. Young guys get you fired. We used to say it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We'll come back, wrap things up next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan. Couple of quick checks we'll get to. By the way, don't forget, join us tomorrow, Thanksgiving Eve Day. It's a Friday for us, so we're treating it like a Friday. Right down to how we kick off the show at 6 a.m. Is it just me, Friday, all that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Most importantly, we're getting loose.
Yes.
Okay?
100%.
I mean, we're going to talk sports, but we're going to get loose. Okay?
I love that about us.
Yes, there's a lot of things to love about us that we love, and that's one of them. Since you're about to go back to the quarterback age thing, why on earth, when only two or three quarterbacks have ever played at 42 years old, would you think it's going to become the new norm? I'll just look around. When you got guys like Tom Brady saying, why would I retire when I finally have the answers to the test? Couple that with a league that goes overboard to protect their quarterbacks to the point where we shake our head in amazement and disgust most Sundays. Why in the world, if these guys add in advanced training methods, why in the world would a quarterback who wants to play and is physically able to play, walk away from it? Now, if they want to, if they just said, okay, I'm good, I've had a nice run. But let me ask you this, Mark. If Peyton Manning was healthy and could still throw a football like he did in his prime, like Tom Brady throws the ball better now than when he was 25.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers, go back and watch him throw the football on Sunday. My God.
Right.
So do you honestly think that if Peyton Manning was still able to, if he still had his fastball, or even something close to it, do you think he would have retired when he did?
Absolutely not.
No way!
Listen, here's the...
With his vast understanding of the game and knowledge of the game, you think that if there was any chance physically for him to continue to be able to do it, he'd do it? Of course he would.
Right. I look at it this way. I think quarterbacks used to fall into their prime, Mike, around 27. And they were in that prime window from 27 to about 33, 34. And then it was done. That's how it, like when I was coming up, that's kind of how it was. Now you could still play 35, 36, but you were, you know, you kind of out of your prime. Now I think the quarterbacks fall into their prime at around 31, 32. And then they play, you know, through into their late 30s, 37, 38. They're still, you know, then they're starting to exit the potential of exiting prime. But I mean, it's just a different, it's a different deal. So yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you think that that could be the case? That's just kind of how I look at it. I mean, am I wrong? Like, you start entering your prime much later than you used to.
So yeah, there used to be a time where if you were a 37-year-old quarterback, I would have thought, yeah, you're pretty much done.
You're toast, right?
But now that's been pushed back at least half a decade.
Yeah, and some of it depends. Obviously, some of it depends on, you know, on, I mean, the kind of beating you take early. And you're like, Ben Roethlisberger is not where right now. He's not where Aaron Rodgers is. Why? Because Ben was a big, strong, stand in the pocket and just take a beating guy. Aaron was never that guy. So it just is it's just a different kind of mentality of how you did it. And so, but Ben is still playing. Ben's still playing really good football. I don't know if you saw the Pittsburgh Charger game, and the fourth quarter, you know, just the fourth quarter dramatics of that. But, you know, he's still slinging it.
Yeah, Ben Roethlisberger will be 40 next year. He's on pace to throw for over 4,000 yards and 25 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And single-digit interceptions.
And
washed up,
right?
I'll take him.
And I had him week four. He's got a hip. He's got a, I mean, he's just like, he can hardly move. He's wearing a big pad on his hip and everything. I mean, yeah, he's like one of those, the kind of commercials that Wilford Brimley, you know, I mean, he's like, I've fallen, I can't get up type of commercial. That's what he's ready to make. And he's slinging.
No. Wilford Brimley is not known for that kind of commercial. You know what Wilford Brimley's famous for.
I know, but I'm just saying, I'm just using
he
him
was
as
never
an example.
The I've fallen and I can't get up guy.
I know, but I was using that as an example. Yeah. Like he could be, he's the commercial guy. Yeah. He is diabetes.
By the way, when you saw Ben the other week, and you said, how you doing? Did he begin to go right away down the litany of things bothering him?
Oh, yeah. First off, he comes right up after practice. Like, you're walking from the balcony. It is eerie. It's like the butler in Mr. Deeds. Remember the butler would just all of a sudden he'd be there all the time?
Right.
That's Ben. Like, you're standing on, cause they've got this balcony. Pittsburgh's pretty set up. The balcony is right outside, the conference room that you stand, that you sit in to do all your meetings. So you actually just walk out on the balcony and watch practice. You're standing above the players. They're practicing right underneath you. I mean, like, they're right there on the field underneath you. It's a great setup. And then you turn around, you walk in. So they call up practice and they're breaking it down. And you turn around, you walk in the conference room, Ben's already sitting in there with the clown shoe on.
Where'd you come from?
Yeah, he's like, how'd you get here? Like, what happened to you? So, yeah, that's kind of how they operate in Pittsburgh. It's a really nice setup.
All right. Okay, we're done. Tomorrow we get loose. And as somebody mentioned, wait a minute, you guys are getting loose on a Wednesday and you have Joel Klatt?
Oh, wow.
I'm telling my boss I have an off-site meeting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Joel will join us tomorrow at 8 a.m., right. So we look forward to that. All right, everybody, we'll see you again tomorrow. Let's make way for Chad and Nate coming your way next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.